What's up, Cougar Nation, and welcome again aboard the Hype Train podcast. I am your conductor, Joe Wheat, as always with my boys, Hunter Miller and Trevor Levitt. We decided that we needed to have an emergency podcast today. I can't remember the last time we recorded, but obviously something incredible happened that we absolutely 100% needed to address. And I want to start by saying, Trevor, how dare you call me the gimmick guy?
Even the gimmick guy. Like, you are the old gimmick guy.
Yeah, the old gimmick guy. And my place has been taken by what? A 12-year-old that can eat a donut in about 35 seconds? But that is impressive. Like, I can't be too mad. But gimmick guy? Are you kidding me?
In my defense, I want you guys to think of every time you've taken a solid nap, okay? And you wake up and you're just kind of coming back to reality. Just words of the wise to everybody else out there. Don't send a text. Don't send your first thought fresh out of off of a nap, because you're going to use words that you don't mean. Of course, the Cougar Tail Kid has absolutely exploded onto the scene. He was front row of The Rock yesterday, doing his thing. He has followers now. He wasn't the only one eating the cougar tail as fast as he could. But yes, I did. I texted Joe and Jess to say, how does it feel that you're no longer the current gimmick guy at BYU? That was incorrect of me. And so I apologize for that. But I put a lot of that on Sleepy Time Trev. Okay.
All I hear is excuses. The nerve, the gumption, the unmitigated gall to say that the work that I did putting together that horrific Snapchat Photoshop to put random people on a train in front of some mountains. There was a great and spacious building. There were all these different little intricate jokes and pieces that went into that. It was the greatest work I've ever done, and it sparked a thriving podcast empire, and you have the nerve to call that a gimmick.
There's some good pictures in this old Hype Train photo.
I'm partially joking when I say that's the best work I've ever done, but like, in reality, it probably is the best work I've ever done. Like, no one, when I'm walking around Utah County, knows me as, oh yeah, that's Joe Wheat. He's an accountant over at this company and he does good work. No, I'm the Hype Train guy.
They say that's Joe Wheat, the gimmick guy.
This is what I do. This is my contribution to society somehow. And my parents are currently crying. My wife doesn't know what to do because she has to come to the realization that she is married to the gimmick guy.
I will say I've taken hundreds of naps in my life, and not once have I immediately woken up from one and texted Joe and telling him he's the gimmick guy. So I don't know if I can say the nap was the culprit.
Who wakes up from a nap and chooses violence against a dear friend?
You know what?
That shares a podcast built on that gimmick.
It was dreams of Sully and me and Hunter behind the barcode. I had woken up. I had finally had enough. Joe's podcast, Joe's posts on Twitter, Joe doing this, Joe doing that. I was just, you know what? I was finally man enough to stand up and say what Hunter's been telling me this whole time.
Well, I've been telling you.
Whoa.
Don't you dare throw this on me.
Whoa, Hunter?
That's crazy.
Is there a mutiny happening?
We've had enough.
Unbelievable.
Me, Trevor, and the intern we finally have had enough.
They have a quorum and they're outvoting me out of Hype Train LLC. Unreal. Also, my own, be Chandler. Your own people.
And Chandler. I have to clarify, Chandler is not the intern. They're gonna be like, oh yeah, there's the fourth guy, Chandler.
Speaking of the intern, he did some excellent work on our BYU map. Hunter, would you like to give a brief recap of the services rendered?
Yeah, so Chandler, again, the fourth member of the Hype Train, texted in our group chat, I think it was yesterday, that was just like, hey, check out this idea that Cincinnati, I think it's Bearcat Matt on Twitter, is doing. Just kind of mapping out Cincinnati fans across the globe. He had them, I think, responding to his tweet and then would map it from there. I thought, that's way too much work. I'm just going to create a Google form and intake all the answers. What I did not realize was that we would get so many responses. I think, I don't know what it's at now. I'd have to pull it up. When the intern was doing all the map work, last I had checked, there was over 600 responses, and that's what they used this morning to build the map that was put out and shared. We're currently sitting at, as I pull up this Google Doc that will not load on live podcasting, 777 responses.
Holy smokes.
So our intern has a lot more work ahead of him, but it's pretty cool, like, to see the results when it got posted, and to see, I think someone did the math and that were BYU fans in every single state except for like Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, and I think maybe Rhode Island. Like, those were the only four states.
Is Rhode Island a real place?
I think it might all just be one county.
I thought it was just like some made up place from Family Guy.
Is that where they live? I thought it was
Quahog, Rhode Island.
Oh, yes.
That's a joke, by the way. I do know that Rhode Island is, in fact, a state. New Hampshire, however, I will be long in the cold, hard ground before I recognize New Hampshire.
What's up, Cougar fans? Let me tell you about our newest sponsor, Charlie Hustle. Charlie Hustle is the premier college apparel brand in all of the internet. Seriously, they have everything you need. They have royal, they have navy, they have white. Kalani could fill his entire wardrobe with just three clicks. From tees to hoodies to crew neck sweatshirts to 1984 memorabilia, they have it all for you. Head over to charliehustle.com and get geared up today.
Yeah, so 46 of the 50 states. I'm sure there are BYU fans there too. But as someone pointed out, like, this is just the people who followed and interacted with the hype train too. So it's not even like a real reflective. It's like obviously a very small sample size to showcase that BYU fans are everywhere and in every single state. And I think if you did it and got all the BYU fans in the country to fill it out, you would probably have every single county in the country, which is crazy to think about.
That actually led me to this question, Hunter, because I've saw the map, but yeah. The 700 plus responses, are those all unique responses?
Those are not all unique responses. Obviously, a ton of them are going to be Utah County, Salt Lake County. I think there's a lot of Wasatch counties. There's like, coincidentally, as I just like scroll through, like there was a lot of repeats and even places I never would have thought, like obviously Arizona's one, but like there were repeat counties in like Kentucky and Missouri and Indiana and like stuff like that. So those aren't 777 unique responses. Obviously, I think probably like 100 of those are Utah County. And that's clear. Like, you look at the map, there's not 800 counties marked, right? So it's cool. I will say, if you are looking to interact with it and you're like, let me put Utah County down, like, we've got it. We're good on the Utah counties.
A relative in a different state and put their county in there.
Exactly. Like, for me, I did Prince William County in Virginia, because that's where I grew up. And there was actually two Prince William County, Virginias on the list, too. Someone else put Prince William County down, interacted with him on Twitter today. Great guy. It was cool to see, originally being from Virginia, like the major freeway that comes out of DC and just kind of heads south into Richmond and into the southern states a little bit, the 95. Like, there was pretty much every county along the 95 freeway from DC to Richmond had someone that said they're from that county. So as a Virginia kid, like, that was pretty cool to see.
But take that, Bearcat Matt. We got more fans than you in your own city.
Yeah. Yeah, we did have a bunch of Ohio's too. But yeah, so pretty cool.
Fun stuff. We love interacting with all of our listeners. We hope we picked up a few more as a result of our little exercise. This podcast is international. I do occasionally check and see where people are listening from. And I've seen people listen from Japan. I've seen people listen from different countries in Europe. So the Hype Train brand is international. So take that for a gimmick, Trevor.
Yeah. Japan's gonna be Parker, right?
I'm sure it is.
He's a cool guy. He's like my little piece of Japan. Every time he posts like food or wherever they went over there, and he's like up at like 2 a.m. watching BYU games and stuff. He's a cool guy. So shout out Parker.
Yeah, as I look at it right now, I mean, obviously 99% is gonna be in United States, but then we've got a little bit of United Kingdom, Germany, Canada, Morocco, America, Samoa, Puerto Rico, Italy, Denmark, Mexico, China, Colombia, France, Philippines.
Holy smokes. That's more than I thought.
That's awesome.
International brand, y'all. International brand.
You won't believe this, but 98% of our listeners are male. Shout out to the 1.9% of the girls.
I'm gonna guess it's Kyrie Potter, Ames Flames, Shaylee Fawcett. I'm trying to think who else
your
I
mom.
Know.
Brandon's
my mom, obviously. Yeah, definitely.
Not a your mom joke. That was a genuine Joe's mom listens to this.
My mom does love the pod. Also, wait, you said 98%? I have 87%.
Where are you seeing this? I'm looking at our podcast hosting dash. Mine shows 90. I mean, who knows what the numbers are, but 97.5% are male, 1.9% female, 0.6 non-binary.
I want to meet the 16.
How very liberal of us.
I want to meet the 60 plus person that listens to our show.
Shout out to them. Yeah. 7%.
Or the person that's 0 to 17. Those two are.
I want to get them in a room together, just hang out, talk BYU sports.
Hey, 0 to 17. That might be the Cougar Tail kid. You never know.
Honestly, that number should be higher. I feel
the
like.
Things that those people have seen.
Why are the teens not listening to the hype train? Are we out of? Are we so out of touch?
We need to get younger and smarter. Trevor, I need you to come back next week with a perm. And Hunter, I need you to start working in words like sus into your vocabulary.
I did explain to a coworker today that you dap someone up with a P, not dab someone up with a B.
That's cap.
So that was big time for me.
We need to come back next week with big time W Riz, as the kids say.
Oh, goodness gracious. The real reason for our podcast is we are now 12 minutes in and we haven't even discussed the real reason that we decided to convene for an emergency show. BYU knocks off number 11 Baylor. And I got to say, the craziest thing about last night is, one, that it didn't warrant a court storming. And two, it was just another win. When in years previous, that is like a program defining type performance. Like, think of how stoked BYU fans were when we beat Oregon. I think it was 2022 by like 40 when they were like the 12th ranked team in the country. Well, BYU just beat the 11th team ranked team in the country, and we're all just kind of like, yeah, it was a good win.
Not bad. I'm gonna be honest.
It's another day in the Big 12.
I'll be candid up front. I did not watch the game.
My heart couldn't take it. I was definitely watching the game cast. We probably shouldn't start our analysis by saying that we did not watch the game.
We're not going to break down.
Hey, all
the game
I'm hearing
now.
Is it's my time to shine, baby, because I Trevor. Watched the whole thing.
If you're looking for a podcast where three guys get on and talk about a game they didn't watch, buddy, we've got the podcast for you.
And look. I know almost, I'll be the first one to tell you, I know almost nothing about basketball. You want me to break down a football game? I got all the stats. I got everything you need to break down BYU's roster going into spring ball. I know nothing about basketball aside from, ooh, yeah, ball goes in hoop for Jackson Robinson. Like that's kind of the extent of my analysis. I need to watch a lot more YouTube videos to go into strategy or have Jason Stewart back on the pod to fully explain this stuff
to
me.
This team made more baskets than the other team, and thus they won. Even that's not even true a lot of the time. But yeah, I unfortunately was at Madam Web. Boys, the reviews
are
in.
Are you serious?
The reviews are in. That movie sucks. That legitimately, Last Jedi, New Star Wars will forever and always be the worst movie I've ever seen. But we've got We've got a heavyweight title fight between that and Madame Web, in all honesty. That movie was terrible.
I knew my money was not going to that movie the second I read one of the reviews and somebody said, "Welp, it at least was better than Morbius."
See, the reviews I was seeing was, it's not better than Morbius. And that's when I was like, I've got to see this movie. Because now I feel like I'm in on the inside joke. Like, now everyone's like, Madame Web. And I'm like, yeah, I've seen it. Like, let's talk. Because, holy cow. Like, have you guys heard of Letterboxd at all? It's like a social media review movie review app. It has a 1.6 on Letterboxd. I gave it half a star. This is my review. No amount of Letterboxd reviews could have prepared me for how truly terrible this CPR instructional video is. And that about sums it up. It was bad. But I got out of the movie and I was like, asked my wife, I was like, can you look up the score of the BYU game? Because I was going to, my intent was to get out of the movie and watch the final 5 to 10 minutes. But whoever decided to be like, hey, movie starts at 7 and then proceed to show 30 minutes of trailers before the movie actually started.
It'll kill you.
Is ridiculous. Because I was like, it's going to be perfect. I'm going to get out of the movie. There's going to be 5 to 10 minutes left in this basketball game. 10 if we're in a free throw shooting contest, like, you know, is possible with these Big 12 refs. I get out and the game had been over for 10 minutes. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, those commercials, dude, like that, like, especially having to find a babysitter now. It's like one of those things where it's like, Taylor's like, oh, well, it's a 2-hour movie.
It's more like a
3.5-hour commitment because we have to drive there, watch the commercials, watch the movie, drive back.
Yeah. So admittedly, I will not have much to say about the actual game versus Baylor. However, big picture basketball, where does this leave BYU when it comes to the tournament? What seed are they? Like, that sort of stuff. Like, I'm up to speed on. I can offer some input there. But yeah, what the X's and O's of the Baylor game, we'll have to leave that to Trevor.
Trevor, do you have any, I guess, give me a 60-second analysis of everything you want to say about the game last night.
Yeah. First of all, I don't know what BYU's like deal is with starting off so slow, but they went behind the eight ball quick. They were down 8-0, but really, analysis first and foremost was that this team was really gritty last night, really tough, and it really stayed kind of playing the game plan that they and Pope had created at the beginning, which very clearly in the first half was shoot the three ball. Which they did very well. They hit 8 threes. The announcers kept talking about it. And it really kept them in the game. The first two scores of the game for BYU were both threes. One from Noah Waterman, one from Ali Khalifa. Khalifa was like 4 for 6 from the three-point line throughout the entire game, which I thought was really nice. But I think the biggest story for me, just as I kind of wrap up this analysis, is that in the second half, it was very clear that Baylor wanted to neutralize the three. And it felt like this game was one of the noticeable ones. I won't say the first one, but one of the more notable ones where it was very clear that Mark Pope and the rest of the team saw the counter coming from Baylor and came out and ran something completely different. It went from three-point shots in the first half to just the back cut of death in the second half, and it just was wide open layup after wide open layup. Foose had a dunk. And it was one of those times where it finally felt like when Baylor tried to counterpunch, Mark Pope was ready with the uppercut. And it was a game where it didn't even feel like BYU had played their best basketball. But they had played really well, and it was plenty enough to win. And that, to me, that adjustment at halftime, predicting the incoming adjustment from Baylor, really spoke a lot to me, both from the players and from the coach's perspective. So that's what really stood out to me.
Yeah, I thought it was a very well-coached game by Mark Pope. There were multiple times where coming out of a timeout, looked like Baylor was about to make a run. BYU needed a bucket. And both times BYU was able to get an open look. And that's more than I feel like I could say for other games this season. So I thought this was a very well coached game by Mark Pope. You mentioned Ali Khalifa, what a beast. He's been getting a lot of love from national national outlets as someone who's going to be the darling of the NCAA tournament. So it's awesome, man. I love this BYU team. We were a little frustrated after Saturday. But man, like what an awesome bounce back to follow that clunker on Saturday up with possibly probably your second biggest win of the season.
Oh yeah. Right after Iowa State still, which I mean, the Iowa State game, even beating Baylor all of a sudden looks better because I follow Cyclone Larry on Twitter and he was talking about that with BYU beating Baylor, that Iowa State's guaranteed at least a second place finish in the Big 12. So for you to own a 15-point win, albeit at home, and we still have to play them at the Hilton later this season, but for you to be able to have that type of win over a top echelon opponent in the Big 12 so far this year, I think speaks a lot to the ceiling of this BYU basketball team.
So let's talk rest of the season, kind of big picture. It's hard with college basketball because like one game doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. Like BYU beats Baylor and their net ranking went from 10 to 11. So it's not like anything like radically changes game to game. But Hunter, what does this game mean for BYU's tournament chances?
I mean, it probably turns them to 100%. Right? Like, is that crazy to say that with this win, I think BYU pretty much cements themselves as a team that's going to hear their name called on Selection Sunday.
Yeah.
Unless things go drastically wrong.
So like
as close to 100%, I think, as you can get without your three biggest stars all tear their ACLs and you lose every game from here on out by 20 points. And like that seems to be the only world in my mind that BYU doesn't go dancing now with this victory.
Yeah, I would say BYU is probably like a 95%. Like I think this probably is a good place to bring it up. I know nothing about basketball, but I do know numbers and I do know spreadsheets. And boy, oh boy, did I create a spreadsheet today. So I call it Wheat Bracketology, or Whackatology for short, because it is whack and it is a bracket. So the way that this kind of works, it's a super rough metric that I created to judge NCAA tournament team resumes using the net rankings. And so to kind of give a brief overview of how the net rankings work, the net rankings are the NCAA tournament committee's primary sorting tool. It's computer ranking that sorts teams into quads. So if you beat a team that's ranked 1 through 30 at home, that's a quad one win. If 1 through 50 on the road, 1 through 75, those are quad one wins. And those are the most important of all the wins. And then you have quad two, quad three, quad four, all kind of get assigned a value in this, where a quad one is worth positive 4 points, a quad two one is worth three, a quad three is worth two, and a quad four is worth one. And then conversely, if you lose a quad one game, it's minus one, quad two is minus two, quad three, so on and so forth. So by adding up a full team's resume, so BYU, for example, is 19-7. With four quad one wins, three quad two wins, three quad three, and nine quad four total, their points are so they would get around 31 points. And so if you compare a team's point total against other teams around them, you can roughly guess where their tournament seed is going to be. Have I lost you guys? How bored are we on my math lecture?
I love it. Keep going.
I'm following along right now on the sheet. So
I'll have a full article on it tomorrow. You guys can see the chart where everyone is seated. I would say it's pretty accurate relative to where teams are projected, like where Joe Lunardi is projecting teams. Right now I have BYU at a six seed, which as the top six seed, which is where they're projected by Joe Lunardi right now. But in terms of Hunter, you brought up like, are they 100% in? If BYU lost every single game the rest of the way, they would have something like their point total would be 17, around 17. Mm-hmm. The average point total for the last 3 years of 11 seeds, which is typically the last teams to get at-large bids in the NCAA tournament, the average for them was about 20.7. So if BYU lost every single game the rest of the way, they would be on the bubble, probably in. I think the lowest team that got in had a total of like 12.2, which was 2022 Rutgers. Mm-hmm. 12.2 was their total score. So like BYU could literally lose every game the rest of the way. They would probably still be in the tournament. If they win one game the rest of the way, their point total goes to like a 24, and that is definitely in. So,
and that's why I think the win yesterday was so big, not just because of it being a win, but because of who it was against. When you are talking about potentially, and this is kind of not out of the realm of possibility, but not likely to lose every game from here on out. When you're splitting hairs at the 11 seed, right? And you're looking at resumes and you're looking at who have they played, who have they beaten. BYU is probably going to have better wins than a lot of teams in those conversations. And yeah, I think the Baylor one is a huge one to look at. Looking at your rankings, I think BYU has beaten two teams that are ahead of them right now in the Wackatology. Obviously, you have Baylor as a 4 seed, and then you have San Diego State as a 4 seed as well. So yeah, that's two teams that are ranked ahead of BYU in this Wackatology.
Three.
Right? Who's the third one?
Iowa State, Baylor, and San Diego State. So
three, with the potential for a fourth and maybe Kansas, although we'll see. They nearly beat Houston, who you have as a number one. So, like, these are all pretty good marks in BYU's favor. Looking at other, like, analytics, the teamrankings.com bracketology has BYU as a 92% chance to make the tournament, to get an auto bid, or to get a bid to March Madness, 9% automatic bid, which would mean winning the Big 12 conference tournament, which is higher than teams like Kentucky or Florida Atlantic, who was a Cinderella team a season ago, St. Mary's, Texas, Villanova, Utah, Cincinnati, Gonzaga. Like, those are all teams that BYU has like a much better odds to make the tournament. So
and a better resume. Yeah. Like I think Utah is what the last four out or something like that. Right now they have 15 points in my metric and BYU has 28. So yeah, like BYU is far ahead of they're certainly not on the bubble. It would take an absolute meltdown to keep them out, and even then I'm not even sure a meltdown would keep them out.
Yeah. And this has BYU as a 4 seed,
so even which is more crazy. And so that I guess that's the second question: is what is BYU's ceiling?
Because yeah, you have Utah State and San Diego State ahead of BYU and Colorado State. Like, you have three Mountain West Conference teams ahead of BYU in your Wackatology rankings. This one has BYU ahead of all three of them.
Yeah,
we'll see how things shake out. I have a hard time imagining that there's going to be three Mountain West Conference teams that are all going to be top 5 seeds.
Well, and yeah, like right now, Utah State is projected as a 7. Lenardi has Utah State as a 7. Colorado State as a 6. Mm-hmm. So these are all teams that are below BYU in terms of projection. I think a lot of that has to do with the Mountain West Conference not getting a ton of respect, but also the Wackatology ranking doesn't. It's obviously not a perfect metric. It probably doesn't put enough emphasis on quad one wins. And probably puts a little too much emphasis on quad one losses.
You'll have to sync with the committee and see what you can do.
Yeah, we'll get back with it. This is the best I could come up with on the train ride into work. But
long train ride.
Yeah. Moral of the story. I think BYU's in. And the second thing I learned that's completely unrelated to this: BYU got hosed by getting UCLA. By drawing UCLA in the 2021 tournament, like absolutely hosed. UCLA, by the numbers, they had a better resume than 2 5-seeds that year. And somehow they were the last team in at 11, and they played a Michigan State team who was ranked 76th in net and had the second lowest Wackatology score of any NCAA at-large team ever.
All right, Cougar fans, T-Lev Wifan here to talk to you about a sponsor that we have had on this channel for quite a while, and that is Coug Connect. Coug Connect is one of the premier NIL sponsors of all of your favorite athletes, and they have one job, and that's for you to be able to get face-to-face with all of these athletes and be able to have a way to be able to put money in their pockets as they continue to be money on the field. You will be able to enjoy plenty of content with your subscription of $10 a month, such as my own show, Face-to-Face Time, where I've interviewed athletes such as Darius Lassiter and freshman phenom LJ Martin, as well as film study and various articles from Coug Connect members. Again, $10 a month. It's one lunch in a month. Put money in these Cougars' pockets. Head to CougConnect.com. Hit that big blue subscribe button and get your subscription today and start putting in your money and paving the way for these Cougs to make a big name for themselves, both on the field and off the field.
That's tough. UCLA made it to the Final Four. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, but it was like, it was always, again, I have no idea. Maybe something crazy happened that I don't remember that season, but like looking back on it, UCLA probably should have been a single digit seed at the very least, and probably should have been a higher seeding than BYU was that year. So yes, BYU got absolutely hosed in their selection.
So this has BYU currently most likely seed as a 4 seed, 18.3% chance, as a 9.2% chance of making the Final Four, and just under a 2% chance of national champs. So you're telling me
there's a chance.
You're saying there's a chance. BYU's got 5 games left on the schedule. Kansas State, at Kansas, home against TCU, at Iowa State, home against Oklahoma State. This has BYU odds to make the NCAA tournament by win total. Currently, they're sitting at what, 22? 22 wins, right?
They're 19 wins right now. They're projected. I think they're projected to get to 22 because I think team rankings has them going 3-2 the rest of the way.
That would make sense. Because, yeah, so projected win total, if they say if they can get to 25, so winning these next 5 games in a turn and a conference tournament game, they're 100% chance. But so that leaves the question then is like, rest of the regular season, how many more of these regular season wins, again, at Kansas State, at Kansas, home against TCU, at Iowa State, home against Oklahoma State, how many of those do you need, or who do you need them against in order to reach that 100% surety in your mind?
Oh, they literally one more win. They could lose. They could go 1-6 the rest of the way, including the Big 12 tournament, and they're in. Like,
how many wins do they need to get to, in your mind, 100% top 5 seed?
So in order to get up to a 5 seed, you need to beat Kansas State and TCU. You need to beat Oklahoma State at home. You need to split with Kansas and Iowa State. So you need to go 4-1. I think that gets you to a 5 seed. If it doesn't, I would say
that what you just outlined seems like it should get BYU to a 3 or a 4 seed.
No. So
to beat Iowa State or Kansas on the road, and to beat Kansas State on the road, and then 2 home wins against TCU and Oklahoma State, and a conference tournament win, like that should, we're talking 4 or 3 there, I think.
No, I still think no matter what, because like the 3 seeds right now, like Iowa State. Right now, if BYU did that, they would get to the point total that Iowa State is right now. And that's what a 3 seed looks like. And Iowa State still has games to play.
Like, but do you think, so like this has Baylor as a 3 seed right now at 19-7, same record as BYU. BYU just right. beat Baylor. You don't think that if BYU gets a road win at Iowa State or Kansas and then wins 4 other games outside of that,
oh, I think that
caused them to maybe swap places with Baylor.
I know it's hard because right now BYU Baylor has 6 quad 1 wins, 5 quad 1 losses. BYU, in order to get where Baylor is, needs to have at least 6 quad 1 wins. like at least. And that's not counting that Baylor could go in and get some more. So what I'm basing my numbers on is if I took the last 3 years worth of five seeds, their average Wackatology score is 42.9. If BYU just did what I outlined and they go 5-1 over their next six games, that puts them at 41.4. So that's squarely in five seed territory, probably pushing a four. But this is where the loss to Oklahoma State really hurts you. Because if you flip that to a win, then that, like BYU today is sitting as like the top five seed, pushing a four. And then eventually if they do go crazy, they could push a three. So I think like if BYU goes 3-2 the rest of the way, meaning they beat TCU, beat Kansas State, beat Oklahoma State, and lose the two road games to Iowa State and Kansas, BYU is probably looking at a six seed, is my best guess. If they win a Big 12 tournament game, maybe two, then they can get up to that five seed. But in my mind, to get back into that five seed line because of that loss to Oklahoma State, BYU's got to go 4-1 the rest of the regular season to feel like they have a reasonable case.
Here's a question just for funsies. BYU wins out, wins the Big 12 tournament. Where are they? They had two.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, let's do that math. So let's just say they go, let's say they go 4-1.
This is the hype train after all.
I don't, Joe, need the analytics. If BYU wins the hardest basketball conference in the country, they're a two seed at least. Like you can't
are they a one seed?
No, they're not a one seed.
They're not a one seed.
Are you sure?
Can't,
yes, I am 100% sure on that.
You can't have a record. I mean, how many games would that be? BYU would be playing,
you know,
in 1, 2, 3, 4 conferences.
They'd be like 27-7 or something.
They'd have 9 wins. So they'd be 27 wins on the season. You would have won the hardest basketball conference in the country. You're a two seed.
You know what? I'll allow it. Because right now your projected two seeds are Kansas, Marquette, Tennessee, and North Carolina. And if BYU wins the Big 12 tournament, BYU will finish with more quad one wins than them all.
Yeah. You'd probably have two wins over Kansas. You'd have probably another win over Baylor or Iowa State. Well, obviously you'd have
three
wins over Iowa State. You'd have
at a minimum, that's four more quad one wins.
Yeah.
To what BYU
have to beat Houston at some point too.
Yeah.
So BYU will, right now they're sitting at the sixth seed in the Big 12 tournament. That would have them having a day one first round bye. They would play the winner of the 11 seed and 14 seed, which right now the 11 seed, as I do some quick math, is Kansas State and West Virginia. Like that's winnable. So you are probably looking at one win over like in the conference tournament, hopefully. Like I would hope.
So that would probably be, I mean, if they get Kansas State, that'd be a quad two.
Okay. And so say they win that one. Now you're looking at, what was it? Game six. Now you're playing the three seed, which right now would be Kansas.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it'd be quad one wins the rest of the way. What if I told you guys on Saturday after that Oklahoma State loss that in 3 days, three short days, that we would be going over scenarios in which BYU wins the conference tournament?
High of a seed could we make BYU in this fantasy land?
Speaking of losing to Oklahoma State, knowing what we know now, they beat Baylor. Is that a trade that you take?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
I thought so. I thought so too.
Yeah. Give me you would always trade a quad one win for a quad two loss.
Yeah. Great wins over mediocre losses for me.
Okay. We are of one accord on that then.
If BYU look, when is the game? Saturday?
Against Kansas State?
Kansas.
Oh, next Tuesday.
Tuesday, a week from yesterday. If BYU beats Kansas, you will see a celebration parade on this podcast like you've never seen before.
You know what? If BYU beats Kansas, just for the optics alone, that vaults BYU into like mid five, pushing four.
If BYU beats Kansas State, we might have to seriously look at like doing a watch party and like stream.
That'd be fun.
Maybe a little partnership with Coug Connect. We can either go to Cubbies and or Chubbies in Orem. Orem Mall Chubbies in their BYU room. Watch the game. Maybe we'll get some football players on. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, if BYU goes into that game having just beaten Kansas State on the road and they're going into Lawrence, we got to do something.
Yeah, absolutely. That becomes our Super Bowl.
Tentatively pencil me down for maybe something.
Oh, goodness.
I will be at all the BYU baseball games. And by all, I mean maybe one of them.
So last question I'll ask on this is, I think Team Rankings has BYU as like a, or sorry, BPI, the ESPN Basketball Power Index, has BYU as like a 32% chance to make the Sweet 16. What are the odds that BYU makes it to the second weekend of the tournament for you guys? Knowing just what you know now, doesn't matter what happens the rest of the season, knowing what you know now, where are you at with BYU's NCAA tournament?
So we may have a Brandon Davies situation on our hands. We don't know.
Possible.
There's just no.
But again, knowing team, that maybe as presently constituted,
there's not going to be a pandemic that cancels March Madness. No. Like BYU's, is that the two greatest what ifs? Like that just crazy.
It's got to be
off the court, out of your control. I mean, I guess the Brandon Davies thing was maybe.
I legitimately think that 2020 team is probably still better than this 2023 team. I think that team beats this team on a neutral floor by like 10 points. Call me crazy.
It beats them on the road probably by like 10 points.
That 2020 team is so good. Trevor's looking at us like, like maybe Ali Khalifa is the difference.
Trevor, I know he's your guy. Yoli Childs would absolutely work Foose in the post. And Jake Toulson
and DJ Hawes
would be absolutely draining threes.
Yes, but I look at like
with Alex Barcelo.
That team was crazy.
That's a good point, dude.
That team was crazy.
You forgot about it. Your starting five was literally Yoli Childs, TJ Hawes, Jake Toulson, Alex Barcelo. I think it wasn't Dalton Nixon. He got hurt by the end of the year. I can't remember who that guy was
right now.
Oh, Zach Selyus. That team just rained.
Brandon. Oh wait, no, this is.
It was Zach Selyus. That team.
This is the next season.
That team shot as a team almost shot 50% from three that season.
24 wins.
As a team.
Colby Lee was freaking throwing down.
Colby
jams.
Three.
Connor Harding was a baller.
That's true.
That was a good team.
Anyways,
it was a good team because they won 24 games that year. The very next season, they still turned around and won 20 games despite losing, obviously like Yoli and Jake Toulson and TJ Hotz. Like you lost your three best players and you still won 20 games the next year
and had a sixth seed in the tournament.
That's how deep that team was.
What conference record do they have in the Big 12?
Trevor, I am not kidding you right now. That team is probably second in the Big 12 behind Houston. Like this BYU team is about two shots away from being in second place. This team is presently constituted.
Yeah.
Should be in second place in the Big 12 right now.
That's crazy. I feel like you've sold me. I forgot you guys mentioned AB and I forgot that team had Alex Barcelo as like their fifth scoring option. But didn't they lose to like they lost to somebody
They lost to St. Mary's in the WCC tournament. It was a really weird game. Jordan Ford hit a buzzer beater at the end. It was really depressing.
Yeah, but they lost. Let's see. Hold on. Beat Utah State. They lost to Boise State. That was a little weird. They smoked Utah, though. Beat San Diego.
No, that team lost. Oh, they smoked Utah State. They lost to Utah year. But remember, Yoli missed the first. You only missed the first nine games or something like that. Anyway, going back to this BYU team.
I will say last thing. The only two teams in the last like 40 years, not 40 years, 30 years, that had more wins and fewer losses than the 2020 BYU basketball team, 2019 to 2020 BYU basketball team, were the two Jimmer years. Like, that's how good that team was. That the only ones that had more wins and fewer losses in the last 30 years was 2009 to 2011.
Hey, Cougar fans, just wanted to tell you all about our new sponsor, Defense Drinks. Defense is a premium recovery mix specifically designed to aid in injury prevention and tissue restoration, setting it apart from typical sports drinks. Defense is formulated with high quality ingredients, primarily collagen and vitamin C, to help keep athletes playing the sports they love. Whether you're an athlete or just at home after a tough workout, Defense can help you recover and recover quickly. Defense contains collagen, which research suggests can help strengthen and restore tissues around joints, reducing the risk of soft tissue injuries. So head to defensedrinks.com today to place your order. Use the code HYPETRAIN at checkout for 10% off, and right now get free shipping on all orders of $75 or more. That's defensedrinks.com.
But not to be outdone, ESPN put out a graphic yesterday that showed that when BYU beats at least three ranked opponents in a given year, they have won at least one tournament game in every one of those seasons. And BYU somehow has now beaten three ranked opponents all in the top 20. I think now they have wins over the 19th ranked team, the 11th ranked team, and the 8th ranked team off the top of my head.
Iowa State's like sixth.
Right. Jeez, you're right. So this team is good. This team's pretty good. They're a squad. They lose by 10 to that 2020 team. But I think BYU's got a real chance of making the Sweet 16 if they get hot. Like if they shoot in the NCAA tournament, if they find a way to shoot 35% from three, they're going to the Sweet 16.
This may be a conversation for a later podcast when we're not at the 45-minute mark. But, like, where does this BYU basketball team rank all time in most surprising, didn't see it coming, like, moments or just overall teams or seasons, like, whatever it is. Like, before the basketball season started, we were talking about how this team was going to be pretty good in non-conference play. We'll see. And then Big 12 play was going to come around and they were going to be terrible and would be lucky if we won a couple of Big 12 basketball games. And now they've beaten Iowa State and Baylor and Kansas State.
I'm sure that there's a podcast somewhere in our catalog that we were talking about over under 3.5 wins in Big 12 play. And I'm pretty sure BYU has hit the over in the last five games.
We were joking about whether or not the football team would have more conference wins than the basketball team.
And I'm pretty sure we all chose the under of 3.5.
Like, it's insane.
Like, is this the greatest surprise? Didn't see it coming in BYU sports history?
I mean, I didn't see the 2020 team coming. Like, I knew that they'd be okay. I didn't expect them to be that good. This is a different animal. Like,
I think
going from what BYU, like BYU had a losing record in the WCC last year and somehow parlayed that exact same roster into a winning record in Big 12 play. Like, it doesn't make sense.
And oh, by the way, they're adding Dawson Baker, Colin Chandler, and Marcus Adams next year.
And
too.
They probably get everyone back.
Except for Jackson Robinson.
That's the crazy thing is your two good transfers haven't done anything. Like your two most heralded, like Ali Khalifa was obviously a transfer. Like he had expectations, but Dawson Baker and Marcus Adams were like your two guys where it's like, they're not going to be very good this year, but they have these two players that have come in, and Marcus Adams, we'll see what the future holds, that sort of stuff. I don't know if we saw the talent of the 2019 to 20 team coming, but like that team added Jake Toulson and they added Alex Barstow. Like they added pieces around a superstar like Yoeli Childs that we had already knew was really, really good. There was nothing like that on this team.
No.
There was no transfers where it was like, these guys are going to be really good right away. And there was no established star or two stars, because you had TJ Haas and you had Yoeli Childs. Like you added two really good transfers to two stars. And I don't think there was anything even remotely close to that on this team. And yet somehow here they are. Plus the season before in 2018, they had 19 wins, which was the same amount of wins as BYU had last season. But their conference record, BYU was 7-9 in the West Coast Conference last season. The year before the 2020 team, they were 11-5. So like they were still good in conference play. And then you just added two pieces and you got super good. And then this year it was like, they're going to win two games in conference play. And now somehow we're talking about like, theoretically, if BYU wins the conference tournament, are they a two seed? It's just insane.
Like, the jump that this program has taken in such a short time, I don't think it has a parallel in BYU sports history. The only close thing isn't even a team. It's Zach Wilson's ascendance between his sophomore and junior year, where we were talking about Baylor Romney's the guy. Like, smart people were saying this, and he turned into the number two pick in the draft.
That might be a bigger surprise, maybe.
I don't want to be like too, I don't know, grandiose with this, but the biggest surprise season in sports history has to be 1984, right? Like,
no.
Because
they were,
they were in the midst.
Steve Young.
No, but you're look me in the eye and tell me that BYU fans at the beginning of that year were like, we're winning the national championship.
Well, but there had been enough recent history where like they went 11-1, I think, in 79. They went 12-1 in 80, down year in 81 and 82. But I think they still won 10 games one of those years.
The four seasons prior, they were 11-1, 12-1, 11-2, and then they were 8-4 in 82, and then they were 11-1 with Steve Young the year before. Like, they were kind of
I hear your argument, because they started the season unranked and they had, you know, they were breaking in a new quarterback, everything like that. But there was still enough recent history where you could say, okay, BYU is just going to reload. I did not.
It was
in 1,000 years. Think BYU basketball was ever going to reload, because the chamber was already empty. There was nothing to reload. The gun was broken on the floor.
Totally different college football world back then too, where like that sort of thing was actually possible.
And the other thing that's so shocking is like that team last year for BYU was awful at 3-point. Like they were one of the worst 3-point shooting teams in the country. And now all of a sudden they lead the country in 3-point field goals made. Like, it just,
a season ago.
If this was the NFL, the entire team is getting a surprise text that they're being drug tested. That's how this season has gone.
Yeah, last season they were 191st in 3-point field goal percentage. And then in this season in 3-point field goal percentage, still not great, 93rd, but that's a 100 spot jump. In made threes a season ago, where can I find totals? Three pointers made, they were 82nd a season ago. Three pointers made this season, they are second in the country. So an 80 spot jump. So you jumped nearly 100 spots in both percentage and just overall made threes in a single season.
And that's after
adding, like, not like you didn't add 3-point shooters. This is the crazy thing. You added Ali Khalifa.
Mark Pope needs to do the Europe trip every year. If we've learned anything, like, for whatever reason, they went to Europe and they came back.
Was Trey Stewart throwing hands with Ali Atiki?
Oh my gosh.
Moment BYU basketball really needed all along.
We were being told by dear friends. We were being told by dear friends in the group chat that, like, players were fighting in camp and that, like, the the Europe trip went horribly, and that, you know, it was just all bad news, and Pope was going to be fired and all this stuff. And now all of a sudden we are talking about the possibility of being a top five seed in the NCAA tournament. And it's a very real possibility. Like it's wild.
If you want to kind of probably wrapping up this 2019-2020 team, if you Cougar fans want to play a fun little game, go to ESPN and go to this 2019-2020 team and look at the high scores of each of those games and just like count one, how many like different players there are, and just they alternate. Like first game Haas, second game Toulson, Barcelo.
Haas, well, this Kyle, season's been the exact same way.
Dalton Nixon, like Celius, Colby Lee's in here against San Diego State, like Toulson, Child, Barcelo, Haas, Toulson. That's said to be back, man. That's hilarious.
I mean, that was when Joe kind of got his first start too. That's true. 2019 to 2020 season.
Just yet another gimmick.
2020 really.
He gimmicked us into a 9 of 10 end of the year.
2020 was a big year for Joe. Like,
that's true.
It was a tough year for a lot of people, but honestly, Joey was freaking thriving.
BYU football was awesome. BYU basketball was awesome.
That's when the hype train.
15 mountains that year. Just,
yeah. Hype train was born. He walked around the Marriott Center and single-handedly willed a victory.
This just in, Oklahoma State beat Cincinnati at home tonight.
Oklahoma State, sneaky dangerous.
So Oklahoma State is now third to last in the Big 12. So BYU has no longer holds a loss to the worst team in the Big 12. So shout out to us.
They hold a win to the worst team in the Big 12, a road win. You know who holds a loss to the worst team in the Big 12 is Kansas.
Yeah.
Makes you think.
There's hope. Maybe
BYU should be the
watch party, baby.
Yes.
Fun times, y'all.
I think one of Kansas's players just got hurt too, right? Like Delore or whatever his name is.
BYU by 1,000.
Always. We'll let the people know if anything happens. But tentatively pencil me down.
Love it. Well, appreciate you guys. You're the best. Love our listeners. Love our Cougs. Look forward to Selection Sunday as BYU has unveiled a 2 seed after winning the Big 12 tournament.
Go Cougs.